COVID.
Jeff Farmer. Yep.
When are you going to get done with that thing, dude?
I don't know if I am, man. This thing's really good.
It's been 2 weeks. You come in my house smelling like an ashtray over
here, dude. 2 weeks.
You smell like an old dirty whore hanging out at the ashtray or something, dude. You know?
Yeah.
Hey, if you have a drop, I should support you, right? Is that what it is?
No.
Positive reinforcement?
No, it's my Niner run.
It's your Niner run? You can't deal with the stress, so you start smoking?
Something like that.
Or is it you're hanging around friends that smoke and they're dragging you back
no,
in?
No, I haven't hanging around anyone. It was.
Can you at least wash your clothes before you come to the house? Man,
this is my smoking jacket.
Well, take that fucking thing off. It fucking reeks, man.
I apologize.
It's like reek, you know? Reek from Game of Thrones and stuff, you know?
I haven't gotten that far yet because, you know, you took my Game of Thrones and I didn't get to watch it.
Well, there's a character that's going to be called Reek.
Yeah.
Probably a character that you like a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, we can relate.
You've had a week, dude. You've had a week to watch that Game of Thrones stuff, dude.
Yeah, well, you know, I got other stuff going on, man. Like, you know, my undefeated basketball team.
You throw your dirty ass fucking jacket on my couch, and now my couch is going to smell like it.
Where do you want me to put it?
Not on my couch. Put it somewhere else.
Okay.
Put it on the floor somewhere. Why don't you put it on top of my dog so you can dry out the dog smell I got, you know?
Get that goddamn dog out of here.
Aw. All right, so we're at movie skill number 61. I am Bad News Ramen. I have my
Raymond. Bad News Raymond, according to Damon Bruce.
According to Damon Bruce, yeah. And then we better have my donuts over here with his 46 followers as compared to my 512 followers. So the guy's struggling over here, dude. Struggling to get some people, dude.
Yeah, it's all right. You're bringing that up about as frequently as Michael Cole brings up his sources.
His sources? Yeah.
Well, his sources.
You seem kind of perturbed about that. You seem kind of mad.
No.
Kind of mad. You look kind of angry over
there. Nah, you do what you got to do. It's all good.
Like, put you down? You keep on putting me down, man. I'm going to keep on coming back up. So what do you want to talk about? Yeah, you have everything all figure out and thinking, so... obviously you don't, so I guess I have to.
But I have to,
you do?
I mean, I got stuff. But you started.
You started looking up in the air like you always do when you have nothing to say.
No, I got stuff.
You should see this guy.
I got things.
You should see this guy at the party, man. Whenever he has to do small talk, he just looks up in the air. You know, he's like, "Is that crown molding up there?" Looks like a little bit of crown molding to me.
Is that what that was?
A little power clothesline, little clothesline right there. Pile driver, oh no. it's like being with Christ Almighty. It's like doing a podcast with Mary Hart or something.
Well, that you just gave it all away because Mary Hart was the Hall of Kayfabe inductee this week.
Was she?
No.
So let's give credit where credit is due. Now normally any podcast would come in and say how great Daniel Bryant was and how he interacted with the crowd and how great the crowd was. But what I'm going to do is, because that credit's coming, but I think the person that we kind of need to give credit to at the same time is Bray Wyatt. I mean, he sold those kicks like crazy when Daniel Bryant did kind of his newfangled finisher with my sloping, flipping foundation I have in this flipping 115-year-old house. I can't even sit on a rolling chair over here, so I keep on rolling towards the computer. It's like, ooh, every time I put my legs up, you know, it starts rolling in, so.
It's a damn shame, man.
It is.
It's a damn shame.
You smell a lot better without your smoking jacket, though. So that's a plus. But I want to give Bray Wyatt some credit. I mean, I thought he sold those kicks like crazy. I don't know if you have that type of reaction. I mean, maybe you do, but it's kind of like the whole thing with, it, to me, it shows that the Wyatt family's working. If they can generate that much response from that crowd, you got to admit that crowd was like something else. I mean, that's like New Jersey crowd level. Type atmosphere with that last segment, with how loud they were. I mean, can you imagine like 18, 20,000 people or whatever it is, all doing everything in unison, being that loud? I mean, I haven't seen a pop like that in a long time, so I thought that was some pretty good TV right there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I would necessarily give all the credit to the Wyatt family. I think it was kind of one of those deals where It's like Daniel Bryan's been hot as shit for as long as can be, and with him going to the Wyatt family, I mean, I didn't think it was terrible or anything, but, I mean, you could see, like, the momentum that Daniel Bryan start to kind of recede, and it was the first time that Daniel Bryan kind of came back and went back and gave the fans, gave the people what they wanted. And so, I mean, I'm not saying that Bray wasn't good. I thought Bray was good. I thought the Wyatt family was good.
I'm not creating all to the Wyatt family or Bray.
Yeah, but I think it was more a thing that, like, the crowd finally got what they wanted, and I just thought it was kind of funny. It was like, you know, as much as they want to push John Cena or any of these other guys, it's like anytime they get the crowd gets the slightest opportunity to cheer for Daniel Bryan, like, they go crazy. And so, even though, I mean, I like Daniel Bryan, I mean, he's not my favorite guy, but, like, I'm pretty high on him. I think he puts on a good match every time. I mean, that's the guy that the crowd wants to see. And I should think that at some point, like, they should kind of fucking wake up and realize that's the guy that they want to get, that the crowd wants to see get the push.
Well, I mean, do you think that's ever going to happen, though? I mean, I don't think that's ever, I mean, do you ever think that's ever going to happen? I mean, if he goes into the Royal Rumble and wins the Royal Rumble, I mean, the whole thing is it happened to Chris Benoit. You know, I felt the same way about Benoit, like one of these guys that deserves to be in the championship picture and hold the belt at least once in his life, or longer than 10 seconds or 15 seconds or a day, like Daniel Bryan. But, I mean, do you think this is ever gonna happen? I mean, I think, you know, just because this was kind of the Wyatt family, I thought it could have lasted probably by at least a month, you know, maybe 2 months, or they could have really slow played it and did like 3 or 4 or 5 months, made them like this monster heel faction. Daniel Bryan could have gave them the rub in terms of becoming like main event guys and really establishing themselves and never losing and everything. And then Daniel Bryan turns on them and then they have a good feud there. You could have played it out. You could have, I mean, that's like a typical, you could have done like an 8 month thing or 6 month thing, not maybe 8 months, but probably about 4 or 5 months of it just building up. He establishes the Bray Wyatt family as this legitimate heel team. And then where they never lose, and then he leaves, and then they go against each other and everything. So it could have been done that way, but at the same time, this is the new age WWE, you know, where everything only lasts for like maybe 2 or 3 shows, and it's something's always evolving, always changing. I'm not saying that's bad, but I'm just wondering, he has a ton of Smark support. He has a ton of IWC support, and I just don't know if the Daniel Bryan fans are ever going to be pleased. I just don't think they're ever going to be happy with anything they do with him unless he has the belt on him. And I'm just kind of wondering what his long-term future is in terms of doing that.
I mean, it's pretty hard to say. I mean, I think that, yes, at some point, I think they'll if the momentum continues as it does and crowds everywhere just keep supporting this guy, I think at some point they'll give him a shot. I think they'll slow play it until they get to the point where they don't have anything else, and they'll say, oh, let's just do this and see how it goes. But, I think he can carry it. I mean, I think if they give him the ball, I think he'll be successful with it. Yeah, I think it's going to happen at some point, but I don't think it's going to be something that they plan. I think they're going to keep trying to plan things the way that they traditionally do it, and then at some point, they're not going to have anything, and they'll say, well, you know, let's give this to Daniel and see what he does, and I think he'll be successful with it.
So with that, it's, you know, it's kind of like the way I kind of relate this to is that when I look at Daniel Bryan, I think of Ronnie Garvin. It's like he faced against Ric Flair, and everybody wanted him to beat Ric Flair for the championship and be the title holder, and he became a world champion. He beat Flair, but then he couldn't do any business after. And I'm not saying that Daniel Bryan can't do business, but I think I don't know in this day and age of the way the WWE is, whether he can actually, I don't know if he can have the old-time champion anymore. The one where they had Cena up to like last year, where every month he's facing somebody different, facing a new challenge here and there. I think there's kind of a groundswell, and tell me if I'm wrong, but I think there's a lot of kind of some support heading towards Randy Orton's way in terms of what he's done as a heel champion so far. Everything that you said that he should have done, and it was kind of Triple H was kind of being the main type of heel, and Randy Orton was being secondary. Well, now I feel that Randy Orton's kind of being that top heel, and I think he's doing a good job at it. It's not that I don't want to see Daniel Bryan be a champion. I think he's deserving of it, but they're finally establishing like a legitimate heel champion, not like a CM Punk heel where he played the heel champion to a T. It's like Randy Orton. I'm not saying Randy Orton's doing anything new or anything major, but he's developing his character as a heel. It's like what we've been waiting for. I mean, it's funny. Like a year ago, we were saying like Orton needs to turn heel. He needs to turn heel. He needs to turn heel. Then he turns heel. We're like, oh, he's not a heel enough. He's not heel enough. Well, I think now he's starting to be heel enough. And I'm really interested to see where he goes. I don't know how kind of you feel about that way also.
Yeah, no. I think he is doing a really good job. I thought it was kind of curious that he lost this match straight up to Kofi. Because in a way it kind of makes him look bad, but like he played it pretty well to get all frustrated about it and go after Cena's dad. Not that I particularly care about that, but no, I think Randy's doing a really good job as the heel champion. And yeah, the distance that he's been getting between him and the Authority, where you're not completely sure that Authority supports him and that he's with him. I mean, I think that's really good because, you know, he wants to rely on that assistance, but he's not getting it, and he's still going out and, for the most part, winning the matches that he needs to win, and then, you know, he loses a match like this. It was a solid enough match. I mean, I don't have any problem with it. I mean,
he lost to Kofi to set up the whole John Cena angle with his dad.
Yeah.
And I mean, so, yeah. No, when it happened, I remember when it happened, I was, I was like, man, what the hell, dude?
Yeah.
I'm like, what the hell's going on? And then when the dad, you know, so I was doing something, I was reading something, and the TV was on, my girls were watching it, and all of a sudden I see him attack Cena's dad, and my old star's like, oh, rewind it, and I was like, was that the Mrs. Dad, or what, or just some random, I was like, hope it's the Mrs. Dad, you know?
Yeah.
But then, you know, I rewound it and stuff, and, they did it before, but it kind of just establishes that storyline more along without really, to me, you're not shoving it down my throat. You know, right. You're not shoving it in my face. It's like it was in the first hour of TV. Uh-huh. It wasn't, you know, they would mention it here and there. They only showed maybe about once or twice, yeah. You know, which really didn't bother me. Kind of the main event was going to be what it should have been, was Bray Wyatt and that whole aspect there with Daniel Bryan. Uh-huh. So it didn't bother me that much. It's kind of funny. It's like you have John Cena and Randy Orton. Normally you'd put these guys like in a main event match, or they'd be at the very end of the show. And it hasn't been the case so far. John Cena hasn't been in the end of the show. And granted, I think John Cena is being used pretty effectively. I don't enjoy him, but I think they're using him the right way right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think the match he had with Sandow was pretty solid. Like, he made Sandow look pretty good. I mean, I'm not gonna go full on $1 million on it, but I mean, he let Sandow get his shit in, and the match was pretty good.
And he introduced some new stuff too.
Yeah, he's doing some new stuff. Sandow had a couple new things. The match was pretty good. I mean, you know, Cena should win that match, and he ended up winning it, so I don't have, like, a huge problem with it. But it was good because he didn't just steamroll Sandow. Like, Sandow, you know, there was a couple points where he thought, well, Sandow is, like, putting some good offense out there. So
I thought he did the job for Sandow. Yeah. I mean, with his kind of lame-ass face expressions. But it kind of showed. I think he was giving him the rub by saying, like, man, how's this guy kicking out? I thought, I mean, he's slowly starting, the biggest problems that we had with him when we were trying to figure out what do we have a problem with John Cena is, like, he doesn't sell for anybody, he always has to win. But, I mean, slowly, I don't want to say enjoy, but I've appreciated what he's done over the past 2 months.
Yeah.
And I thought him coming back would be the death knell for, you know, the more of the same, but it's kind of been a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, no, he's been doing a pretty good job. I think the matches he's put on, you know, we've always said, like, you know, he puts on really good matches, like, only with guys that can really work and sell for him. But he's been able to put on pretty solid matches with guys that, you know, you wouldn't traditionally think are, like, you know, Sandow's a good guy. He's good. He's good on the mic. I'm not saying he's, like, a top-level worker. He can work all right. But, you know, when he can go and have a good match with Sandow, I mean, I think that's some growth on Cena's part. So, you know, I can't complain at this point.
Now, is this us, like, and I don't think we will ever like John Cena. I think we've kind of accepted that he's a necessary evil. But with him kind of doing what he's doing, and you think this is like the, I mean, I've always, you know, like, you look at, like, Mankind's career and Mankind as a champion. Like, when he first came in, it's like, well, then there's no way this guy's a champion. But then the machine, rightfully so, the WWE machine, made him a huge star. I mean, is this kind of more of a case where Cena's kind of, the machine's kind of pushing him along to kind of get more respect out of, I think, of hardened fans like us? Or do you think it's, you know, I mean, where's that kind of lie? Because I kind of feel like a little bit like maybe, like, the machine is kind of, will generally push me into directions like thinking Mankind's a legitimate champion. And I thought he was a very entertaining person. But when I first like I remember when he was Cactus Jack, and I was like, dude, I'm like, this guy sucks. You know, he doesn't really do anything for me.
Yeah.
And the machine gets a hold of him and really kind of really shows different sides to him. Now, of course, for him, it's three different sides, you know, which was part of the storyline. But is this kind of the machine kind of showing John Cena in a different way? Or, I mean, do you think they kind of make a concerted effort to kind of say, look, you've steamrolled over everybody, but nobody likes you. So this is kind of the way that you can have people start liking you. Do you think that's an effort on their part?
I don't know. I hadn't really thought about it that way. I just figured maybe Cena realized that his act was getting stale and he wanted to introduce a couple new things. I mean, if it is on the part of creative to make him a little bit more interesting, then yeah, good. Then I'll give him credit for that. So, you know, it's hard for me to say if it's, like, contrived or if it's kind of coming naturally. But it doesn't really matter at this point. I mean, at least I'm willing to watch these Cena matches and kind of take them for what they are and accept them that they're pretty solid at this point.
I think the work that he's doing now does kind of two things. If it's going to be where Cena never becomes a heel, at least he's watchable. But at the same time, if he ever does turn heel, I think what he's doing over these past 2-3 months is really kind of, it can set him up to be a heel, mm-hmm. and have people like us kind of believe it and kind of more, I wouldn't say cheer for him, but kind of pull for him maybe as a heel. I think, you know, once you establish a heel on someone, I think you're going to, at least from us coming from where we're coming from, we're going to like the guy a little bit more just because he's a heel, because he goes against the grain. But I'm not saying that the work he's doing now is going to enable him when he becomes a heel, because I'm not saying he will be a heel. But I think either way, you know, I'm kind of looking at, you know, he's 10 years in, 11 years in, he's never been a heel. And I don't know if he's ever going to be, if he's going to be like a Ricky the Dragon Steamboat that can never play a heel. Mm-hmm. But the work now, it's watchable. You're right, it's watchable. And as long as he's not in the main event or whatever it is for, like, each Raw, I mean, yeah, he is going to be the main event for pay-per-views, but I can get with it for now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and to be fair, you know, he did play a heel in the beginning part of his career. You know, it's been a long time. You know, my thing with him as a heel, it's not really related to what he's doing in the ring. It's more along the lines of what he's going to do when he starts talking. And, you know, I think that he's got a lot better. Like, his matches have gotten a lot better. I still really don't care to hear anything he has to say, to be honest. And that would be my question. Could he really cut a good heel promo? I don't know about that. You know, I haven't seen anything that would make me think all of a sudden, yeah, he could cut a good heel promo. But, yeah, I mean, the ring work's been pretty solid. So, you know, I'm not going to knock him on that. And, like, he's the kind of guy that less is more. You know, they're not running him out there to do a bunch of main event promos and stuff like that. I'm glad they're letting the workers do what they do. I thought the Usos were pretty good. You know, I mean, I was pretty kind of excited that they actually got to do, like, not that their promo was great or anything, but they actually got to cut a promo.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's the first time they cut a promo, the first time they got, like, a little bit of a.
Well, they did have the back against the wall promo on SmackDown, which I thought was epic. You know, whatever back to the, like, whatever it was, it's like, yeah dude, sure.
Yeah, it wasn't exactly hard times.
Yeah,
but you know, for them, you know, it wasn't.
Yeah,
they're
cutting their teeth.
Yeah, and if they're gonna let them get a little bit more chance to expand their character, good for them. Because I mean, I think they're a really good tag team.
Well, the funny thing is, when you bring up the Usos, I was kind of thinking about that. Especially that they won both matches. One of them was disqualification. One of them was legit out of the ring stuff. And it was kind of nice to see them actually, like, win a main event. And mm-hmm. and even though the storyline really wasn't about them in that match, they still got, like, they can put that under their belt. You know, they can say, yeah, like, we beat the Wyatt family twice or whatever it is. So, yeah, I mean, they're coming along. But I think, to tell you the truth, out of those tag teams, I think they're the best. I wouldn't say they're the best, but I think they're the worker tag team of WWE. You know, yeah, they're the workers, yeah, and they're doing a great job.
Yeah, no, it's funny. I got to thinking, and it's like, you know, I'm watching, like, the Rhodes match, and the Rhodes always put on a good match, but in a little bit of ways, they're kind of getting stale to me. I mean, I like watching them. I think they're good champions, but I think it's getting to about that time where it's time to change the champion for tag teams. And, you know, obviously it's not going to be the Usos because they're both faces. But I would think the Usos are kind of putting on better matches at this point than the Rose Brothers are. And I was glad to see, at least, you know, they're getting a little bit more run than they used to get. And if that's going to continue, good. I mean, it might be good. It might not be great when they cut the promos, but at least they're getting a chance to do something with it, which they've never gotten.
You know, I wish that we got to see the Usos when we were like 12, 13 years old. Because if we were at that age, I mean, to me, the Usos are the complete package. They can go power. They can fly. And they can strike. Yeah, mm-hmm. they have like kind of like they're not an overpowering team, mm-hmm. but they can play the power moveset if they wanted to. I thought the double jump that they did against the first match against the Wyatt family with Bray Wyatt and Daniel Bryan. I thought that was pretty epic. I mean, it's like we've seen it before, but this is like the first time I really like looked at it and appreciated it, going like, hey, these guys are. They're putting it together. I think their characters is the typical type baby type thing, and I don't know if Samoan wrestlers can ever get past either like being like a crazy headhunter type heel or just like a super super baby face. I don't know if there's The Rock could do it. The Rock did it, but I don't know. Roman Reigns is probably kind of towing that. I mean, Roman Reigns, you don't look at that guy as being a Samoan guy. You look at the guys like being a powerhouse, you know, and of course in IWC, like all the flipping women love Roman Reigns and stuff. So he's kind of like his own entity unto itself. You don't look at him as a Samoan guy, where you look at the Usos as being like the straight Samoan. And
I don't really think that's the case. I mean, they never played like the headshrinker type gimmick. I mean, I think they're just good.
I'm not relating to them being Samoan and being like a headshrinker type gimmick, but they're definitely playing off their Samoan heritage.
I mean, I think they do to a certain degree, but...
To a certain degree. I mean, the one guy's flipping talking to Samoan, the other guy's translating for him in their promo.
Yeah, but if you look at, like, the overall of the last couple of years, I mean, I don't think... maybe so, I guess. They're coming out with their entrance and stuff. But what the traditional Samoan gimmick was a completely mindless berserker, and they don't play that. They still... I mean, honestly, like, they play more like... to me, they play more like... like a black tag team would be,
a blaxploitation.
Not a blaxploitation, but I mean, like for instance, you know, they probably would have liked to have Crime Time get over as this big time tag team, and they didn't have the chops. But in terms of like kind of being kind of tied into the hip hop scene, they more remind me of like a traditional black tag team. Than what the traditional Samoan tag team would be in terms of like their presence when they come out, how they perform in the ring, because you know I'm used to if you say traditional like Polynesian like Samoan Tongan tag team, it's just like some mindless beasts that come out and just brutalize people. And they don't do that. Like you know they have like a you know they're not necessarily great on the mic, but like they have a little bit of a swagger to them. They're pretty athletic. They come out, they dance, and they do things like that. That's not things that you typically saw like Samoan tag teams do. That's more like along the lines of what you saw a lot of like the traditional black tag teams do. So I think that's more in the line like traditionally of what they do. So I wouldn't peg them as like your traditional Samoan tag team, even though yeah, like the promo and their entrance with doing the haka
and the face paint,
yeah, and stuff like that. But you know, I mean, the face paint is more of a homage to like their family, which you know I think they have every right to do. They probably have, you know, if you really look at it, they probably have like the longest legacy of family in professional wrestling,
which is never really stated.
No,
you know, yeah. I mean, you always think of the Hart family and Ortons and even like you know, whatever. Okay, so the next kind of because I guess I'm going to bounce questions off of you. CM Punk, is he ever going to main event? Because here's the thing. I think his contract is, I don't know if it's close, but I mean, I think like he has like maybe like, I don't know if it's it's going to be going to the entire span of another WrestleMania, but is this guy ever going to main event in a WrestleMania? I mean, it just looks like he's not going to do it.
Well, you know, that's pretty hard to say, but I don't ever remember them specifically like referencing the fact that he could main event WrestleMania before, so I think that's a pretty nice tease. I mean, I think your traditional school of thought thinks Batista's going to come in and win this Royal Rumble, and he very well may. But even just the fact that they reference, like, you know, you could be main eventing WrestleMania, they've never said anything like that to him or about him, like, in public before. And, you know, he kind of has this, like, as far as the IWC sees, you know, we all know he's never really main evented pay-per-views. Like, even though he was the man, you know, he was usually, like, right underneath John Cena for some meaningless match. So the fact that they would reference it, I think, is pretty good. I could see them, like, directing him towards that this year. I mean, I think Randy Orton, I mean, if Randy Orton holds the belt, if it's Randy Orton CM Punk, I mean, I think that could be pretty solid as a main event WrestleMania. So, yeah, I do think that he'll get some kind of WrestleMania.
This WrestleMania?
I mean, I don't think it would be terrible. I think
no, I don't think it would either.
I think it'd be pretty good. They've teased the idea and they've kind of floated the idea that Randy Orton and CM Punk were going to have rivalries in the past and never really came to it. So at the very least, it'd be kind of something fresh. So, and I think matchup-wise, it's pretty good. It's like CM Punk is definitely physically the smaller guy, but not so much smaller that he can't get all his stuff in on Randy Orton. So, I mean, I think they could put a really good match on, to be honest.
I think there's a lot of obstacles for him being the main event for WrestleMania this year. I don't think Batista's going to win the Royal Rumble. I think Del Rio is going to thwart that a little bit during the Royal Rumble. I think so, just with what's going on. I think you still kind of have the whole Daniel Bryan thing, too. I mean, I think if there's anybody that, with the pop that this guy's getting, I think if it's going to be in between those two guys, I think it'll probably be Daniel Bryan, unless Daniel Bryan does something with John Cena or whatever it is, and they go against each other, because they've proven to have a good match in the past. I don't know what's going on with that whole thing. I just personally think that he'll never main event at WrestleMania. The other question I want to ask you with CM Punk is, what's wrong with the guy, dude? I mean, you know what I'm saying, right?
Man, he looks tired, man. I mean, like he looks like...
Because his matches aren't that good.
Yeah, I mean, they're fine, but yeah, he doesn't have not quite the same energy that he's had in certain matches in the past, and not the same energy that Daniel Bryan's bringing in some of the matches. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, maybe he's hurt. Maybe he's just kind of worn down from kind of carrying it on a week-to-week basis for so long. You know, I think that he could still ramp it up for a big match if he had to. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, you think he's hurt? You think he's tired? The other thing actually was... There was a lot of reports, and it's not really recently, but like there was a couple tweets that he had put out over the past month that he was kind of showing that he was disenfranchised with the WWE creative. So I don't know if it's like some kind of silent protest on his part, but I mean, maybe he's just frustrated.
Yeah, I definitely, I've been through this whole podcast, I've been the biggest proponent of this guy, and I know you have too. I'm not saying that I've been a bigger proponent than you, but you know, he's kind of been...
I was the guy that advocated for him to be Wrestler of the Year.
You did. True. And I was gonna advocate for Daniel Bryan being Wrestler of the Year, yeah, because of things that happened, like things that happened this past Monday. You know, it's kind of like I don't want to describe it as like a chink in the armor, you know, but like this is like my guy. And this is the guy that he got me back into wrestling. Uh-huh. And there's always going to be, at least for me, there's always been wrestlers that have got me back into wrestling. The Rock got me back into wrestling. Scott Hall, to a small part. Benoit got me. You know, it's kind of like Benoit got me back right before the Attitude Era, because I saw this guy. I was like, I like this guy. And granted, he was part of the Four Horsemen. So anytime the Four Horsemen comes back, I'm going to start watching wrestling again. Yeah. Minus the Paul Roma Four Horsemen, but then The Rock was the one that really brought me. I mean, The Rock was what kind of brought you back in. And NWO brought you back in. The Rock, yeah, kind of, you know,
brought me back to WWE.
Yeah, and so you're always going to have like these like all time wrestlers, at least for me. And CM Punk is definitely one of those. But it's really tough to kind of like when they mention these matches, right? When it's like New Age Outlaws, CM Punk versus The Shield, it's like, yeah, that's the match I want to see. Or even like last week when it was like, yeah, maybe I'm being too hard on the guy, because the Roman Reigns to me really didn't live up to what I wanted to be. The problem with the Rollins ones was I thought John Cena versus Rollins was way better than that one. It looks like his moves aren't as crisp. I'm not saying he's botching, because I don't think CM Punk can ever botch anything. Mm-hmm. But the ferocity of like you say, his kicks, and he's kind of relying on diving out of the ring. It's like, I don't think that's that good of a spot. Yeah. It's fine, but it's like he does so much more better stuff in the ring. But then he does like little things too. I mean, like when it was the last match with the Shield and the New Age Outlaws and him, he had this one sequence where he did like two like really good, like he did something to set up his neck breaker and something, like, you know, nobody else can do that. But by his standards, it was bad. It wasn't as crisp as it usually was. It wasn't like the run that he had when he was champion. When he was champion, he was on. Everything he was doing was good. His shining wizards in the corner, just they look really soft. He's not getting the height, and I'm just kind of wondering, like, you know, you always kind of bring up Sting, you know, where Sting kind of, you know, once he kind of lost his legs and he kept on doing the same move sets, he needed to be a high flyer for those moves to really take off. And he used to say, like, man, that corner splash he used to do was weak. And I was like, well, it used to be good way back when.
Yeah.
Granted, it is weak now. And so it's kind of that doubt kind of seeps in a little bit with me. It's like, well, maybe, I mean, he's wrestled for a long time. He's done all these high spots for a long time. I mean, maybe his body's just kind of breaking down a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think that's really the case. I mean, I think either he's hurt or he's tired or he's frustrated. That would be my 2-3 guesses. I don't think in any way that he doesn't have it anymore. I would say it's probably one of the other three things more than likely. I think that he still has a lot of great matches left in him. I don't doubt that at all. My biggest concern would be, like, in terms of going towards WrestleMania and if he's on main event or not. It's like now with the New Age Outlaws turning on him and they kind of slowly putting him against the Authority more. I mean, I got the fear that he's going to end up wrestling Triple H. And that's kind of, you know,
Do you think you can have a good match with Triple H?
Not at this at the current rate he's working and what Triple H is able to bring to the table at this point, I don't think it would be a great match. I'd still probably watch it, but I don't think it would be a great match.
Would it be like the Undertaker match? I mean, because, you know,
I don't think it'll be as good as the Undertaker match.
See, the thing is, like, the IWC just like loved that match, and I thought it was a good match, but not because of anything that was happening in the ring. It's just kind of the drama, that the storyline that he was able to tell. I still think Triple H can tell a good story in the ring. Not physically, but at least in terms of, like, you want to see him, like, get his ass kicked or whatever it is. You want to see him lose. And granted, Triple H has fought. Everybody that he's fought has kind of been, they've been has-beens. You know, I mean, Undertaker was a has-been the past three times that he was in WrestleMania with Triple H. He's done. You know, as much as everybody's gonna hate that, Undertaker is done. And then he had a guy that in Brock Lesnar that had a ton of ring rust. Just, I mean, you could tell that in that match. And it wasn't like Brock Lesnar he had some nice spots here and there when he was first coming out. When he was like 23, 24, I mean, his physicality and his imposing figure was like, that was the story right there. Well, he's not that so much anymore. I mean, he's not bigger than everybody else. He's not faster than everybody else.
I mean, I don't even think it's that. I just think the way he's been booked, he's lost so many times that he doesn't have that mystique about him anymore. I'll put it like this. If Triple H and CM Punk are going to have a good match, then CM Punk's going to really have to carry it. Like, Triple H can be a good element to it because he knows what he's doing in there. But it's going to have to be one of those where CM Punk makes him look really good and then still comes out. If it's a 50-50 partnership between the two of them, if CM Punk's kind of like doing, you know, what we've kind of seen from him from the last couple of months where it's not really his A-plus game, then I think that match would be pretty lackluster. But if CM Punk can kind of get it together and like, maybe he's resting, maybe he's saving it up so he can make a strong run towards Mania or something. If he can pull it all together and done what he's done in the past, the match could be really good because Punk can make anybody look good.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think kind of the extra element that's added in there is that you know that there's, I wouldn't say it's 150% legitimate beef between Triple H and CM Punk, but you can tell they have creative differences. And I don't know how much of that is kayfabe. I don't know how much of that is a shoot with it really happening, but I think there's an element there where I think both of them can kind of elevate their game. You know, I think CM Punk legitimately wants to beat Triple H in a match. And I think at the same time, too, I think there's a small part of Triple H that if he jobs to CM Punk, he's jobbing for him to kind of not put him over, but to kind of say, like, look, all the stuff that you've had to go through and all the naysayers, this, that, and this from the top, from creative and stuff, it's like, you beating me, it's like, this is like kind of like our apology or whatever it is. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I think there's kind of an element to that where...
I think so, but that really only goes so far as that after that match, they book Punk correctly. It's like, if he just does a job for him and then they continue to bury him, like it's token. But if he goes and does a job for Punk and then that kind of springboards Punk into like the second half of this coming year, then yeah, I think it's legit.
Well, do you think he's being buried? I mean, this guy, I mean, he had to have the...
I think buried's like too harsh of a word because he's still in a lot of like major matches and stuff. But I mean, he's nowhere for a guy who, you know, you could say had the greatest run as a champion for the last 20 years. Then you just drop him off the face of the earth and he's in a bunch of like mid-card to upper mid-card matches. I mean, it is what it is. It kind of is a burial compared to what he's done for the last 2-3 years.
But see, in order for him to have that run, though, John Cena, I mean, then you could say that John Cena was buried, you know, because he had to kind of take a lesser role or be in the lesser storyline. Well, but he was still like main evented, though.
So, yeah, I mean, he main evented like 80% of their pay-per-views. He never lost to anybody. Like, you know, Punk's losing. He lost to Reigns last week. I mean, Punk will lose his fair share of matches. Meaning, in comparison to what John Cena, the way he's usually booked, then yeah, he got buried. But it wasn't really a burial when you're winning 80% of your matches and all your pay-per-views and you're main eventing them all.
The thing with Punk that, to kind of lend to what you're saying, is that I felt that they didn't have anything to do with him. So they put him in the stuff with Paul Heyman, and he finally got his comeuppance. There you go. And he got his revenge on Paul Heyman. So there was that. He faced the Shield 1-on-3. He beat them. So it's kind of like, and you know, John Cena has beaten the Shield, you know, 1-on-3. So I mean, he's done stuff.
I don't think he has.
Yeah, well, it was a case where like, you know, there's three guys in the ring, and then it was like a 3-on-3 match or whatever. It was an elimination, and then John Cena ended up beating all three of them and stuff. Mm. So yeah, that, you know, so it's like he's in a lesser role, but he's still, yeah, he's losing, but you know, when he loses, it's for the purpose of the storyline. And it's the whole thing that they're doing with the Shield. And there's still some things that he can do with the Shield. I mean, I still think that something's going to happen there. I mean, I'm hoping that he kind of leads the Shield and does something and does that. But there's kind of, you know, there's little things here and there, you know, with the Shield, and he's helping the Shield come along a lot, I think, without really making it obvious that they're going to split the guys up. Like, you'd have your normal storytelling where Reigns looks at Ambrose, Ambrose looks at Reigns, and Rollins is in the middle, and they break up, and like, oh, what's going on? I mean, CM Punk has been able to extend them for another 2-3 months, and now it seems like that they have the Shield has no problems whatsoever. You know, they're back as one big unit again. Mm-hmm. And so there's kind of that, you know, yeah, WWE Creative doesn't know what it's going to do from like month to month. And I kind of felt that they were thinking like, well, let's break them up now. And like, well, no, we make money with these guys doing this. Well, let's put them with CM Punk. He can extend it and then kind of unify them again. So he's kind of, he's still, his backroom pool is still there.
Yeah. I mean, I could kind of put it this way. Like, CM Punk's the Swiss Army knife right now on WWE. Whatever they need him to do, they can put him in that spot, and it's going to be good. But in some ways, that is a burial, because he was the guy that was carrying the show for most of the past 2 years. So, I mean, it's not a straight burial. I mean, I'd say it's more of a burial than Cena got on the year when he wasn't a champion. Okay, but, I mean, at least CM Punk, like, I think they know his value, and I think they're still, even though they're not giving him a good run with the belt or anything right now, or putting him in any programs that are going to lead to that, I mean, I think they know that he's important to the show, and they're keeping him at least, like, pretty relevant, so I'll give them that much.
But he's kind of becoming the guy that we've always liked. Macho Man.
Yeah, he is Macho Man. Yeah,
Ric Flair.
He's the Macho Man right now.
He's Ric Flair also. You know, Ric Flair during the whole WCW when it was at its height, he was the one that was doing all, he was doing the jobs for people that needed to do it. So he's kind of, and I don't know if he realizes that or not. I mean, we kind of do. It's just like it's nice to always know that he's there. And it's nice to know that, like, okay, it's a three-hour show. When CM Punk comes on, I'm going to be entertained for that segment or for two segments or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on with him personally and professionally, and he has to work it out. Thank God that he's straight edge, so you know he's not turned to drugs or turned to alcohol or anything like that, because I think most people would, being treated the way that he's been treated. But, yeah, it's just kind of a... To be a fan of this guy and to see him not perform the way you know he can perform, it's not disheartening, but it's like I'm waiting for this guy to come back. Mm-hmm. He's been here the whole time. It's like, dude, and I thought I'd never say this, but like, take a couple months off or take a month off or something.
Yeah.
And kind of recharge your batteries and come back and just kick ass like we know you can.
Yeah. I mean, you can say that, but then, you know, I think the also thing too, like, you know, I don't, you're mentioning his contract status, and I really don't know what it is either. I haven't looked at it, but you know, when did he really get, like, his most backstage pull, his most leverage was the last time his contract was up. And, you know, I mean, McMahon pretty much, you know, he opened the door and gave him the world at that point because he knew, like, what a commodity he had. So if it's kind of a thing like that where he's running up on the end of his contract again, I think McMahon's going to realize, like, I can't let this guy go. I can't let this guy walk. I gotta give him what he wants.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you can also look at it and say, well, the last time we did this, you know, the guy was really successful at it. So yeah, maybe it's biding time at this point until he has the leverage that he needs to demand what he wants to demand.
Well, he's saying that he's thinking of retiring after his contract runs out.
Yeah,
I don't think
that's going to happen.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, but it's kind of lend what you're saying.
Yeah, it's leverage, but... Yeah, so if that's where they have to go and they have to go and negotiate, and then, you know, that's what it needs to be for McMahon to give him what he wants and creatively what's best for business at that point, then I'm willing to wait, because the last time he got a run, it was pretty much the best run we've seen in 20 years.
Yeah. So all Roman Reigns drop kicks on the apron aside.
That was pretty sick.
No, that was. Is there anything else you kind of want to touch on over the past, like, week? Anything else you want to talk about?
Actually, yeah. And this is going
to... Kind of, actually, yeah.
This probably will end up shocking you.
Look at them girls over there. Hello, girls.
I was just watching Tombstone.
That's what I'm saying, dude.
It was on HBO.
Hot damn, this bird's jumping.
I kind of wanted to... I don't know if you followed it at all, but...
Oh, wait. Before... I forgot. We forgot to do this. And I'm sorry that I cut you off. You kind of have that air about you, that you're irked that I cut you off. But, rest in peace to Mae Young. She died tonight.
Did she die?
Yeah. Well, at least that's what Twitter's saying. But, you know, if it's true, whatever it is, I'm not going to go in this grand old thing about divas wrestling, this and this, because I've never been a fan of female wrestling. But, you know, for a lady like that, you know, coming up during a time where everything was... I mean, it's what, 1940s or, mm-hmm. you know, 1930s mm-hmm. or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You want to say pioneer, I guess you could say pioneer, but, you know, yeah. give her a due.
Yeah.
Know?
But and I'm with you on this. Like, you know, I'm not going to go all overboard, but I thought, like, probably the coolest story I read from anyone that I was following on Twitter was there was, like, a little thing with her and Bubba Ray. So when Bubba was in WWE, there was a spot where he was supposed to powerbomb her through a table. And basically, she went up to him and said, "Hey, don't be a little bitch and pile drive me like I'm a girl. If you're gonna do it like a man."
Powerbomb or pile drive?
Powerbomb through the table, and like he did it. I mean, I don't know if you remember that.
But I really remember.
Yeah, that. He put it through there legit. So I mean, I think that's a good testament to what she was, and especially at the advanced age that she was able to take that through. I mean, this is a tough lady. So yeah, I can deal with that. I have no problem with you interrupting me there.
So no more interrupting again. So
no, yeah.
So go ahead.
Well, speaking of Bully
so,
Ray.
So, I mean, you already said that.
No, yeah. Well, I have, like, this segue because we were just talking about Bully Ray. And speaking of that, I was going to ask you a question about another bully in professional wrestling. The big guy. Did you follow any of this
the
Twitter rant that he was...
Right back tweets?
Yeah.
I, you know, it's funny. Because I follow Ryback, but then I also follow this guy called Ryback Rage. And it was like, whenever I read the legitimate Ryback, I thought it was Ryback Rage. Because Ryback Rage is just like this straight parody account.
Right.
And so I'm just reading, I'm like, oh yeah, it's Ryback Rage. And then
he figured out that was actually
Ryback. I was like, hey, wait a minute. Yeah. It was actually real Ryback. Yeah.
I'm just curious, what do you think? Because it's like, to me, like, he's pretty bland when he speaks. And I think we've kind of spoken like about this on the show. He's kind of getting better in the ring the last month or so. But, like, I thought that this actually showed a little bit of personality with him on Twitter.
I think it's a work. I think all of it's a work. I think it's sponsored by the WWE. I think they're kind of looking at his presence and stuff. And when he first joined Twitter, it was just straight junk, you know, like the hunger within me and all. It's like the Ultimate Warrior induction, you know, it's the same type of stuff.
Uh-huh.
And the funny thing was that when he came on and on Raw, it's like I see this guy in a new light. You know, it's like, yeah, that's the guy. The guy that he is on Twitter, that's the guy that I want on TV programming as well. Uh-huh. And when he actually joined the broadcast booth, either like SmackDown or Raw, whatever. I think it was probably SmackDown or Main Event, maybe.
I think it was SmackDown.
I thought he was really good in it. Yeah, I thought he was very entertaining and stuff. And that's kind of what I want to see. So I'm glad that he's doing it. I don't think he's getting his hand slapped because of it. I think they're actually doing it on purpose. And him deleting all of his tweets, I mean, hell, I mean, I don't know how many tweets this guy's done, but
right, yeah,
he deleted every single
tweet.
Yeah,
thing, I looked at it today, and it was that, and then there was only three tweets there, and I thought that was kind of interesting. Yeah, I mean, maybe it is a work, but even if it is a work, I mean, I think it's the best thing they've done for his character since they've brought him back as Ryback, you know, as opposed to Skip Sheffield. So, maybe it is a work, maybe it's not, but I think he's better on... If this is what he's going to continue to do, he's definitely better on Twitter than he is on a microphone, but at least there's some semblance of a personality that's developing with this guy.
And I think it's a semblance of who this guy actually really is. You know, I don't think he's I don't think he's the straight heel that he is, but I think it's an extension of who he really is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, when we first saw him as Skip Sheffield, or whatever he was named in NXT, maybe that's what he was named.
That was
it. There was something with this guy. And it wasn't so much like because he was bigger than everybody else, but I know I saw something in the guy. I mean, like, this guy has something. I don't know what it is, but he has something. And he's showing that something right now. And it's kind of funny. It's like, this is where the machine didn't work. You know, they try to make him this big-time thing, and there's a ton of backlash to it. And so, and they kind of put him, you know, and then he had to be like the heel where he was like beating up on people trying to get some chips and salsa and stuff and everything. And that wasn't working either. And so now they're kind of putting him in a position where, you know, he's wrestling, he wins some, he loses some, but at least, he's creating a buzz. And a lot of people that, the people that we follow on Twitter, and I'd probably say 75% of the people that I follow on Twitter are wrestling people, or wrestling fans. And they're talking about it, and it created, I wouldn't say controversy, but it created discussion points. Like, oh, you know, I think Seth Mates came out and said, like, oh, Ryback didn't get released. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, he actually, like, played that whole release part well, because he said he got stopped by a cop.
Mm-hmm.
And then a tweet later said he's been released. And so everybody thought that he's been released by WWE. And it's like, no, he was released by the police officer. So, I mean, there's things in there. And there's a funny one where he said he did something that what was his finisher called? Like the... whatever, he said he did it to Paul Heyman, and it was like it was comfortable because Paul Heyman's like stomach is like a bunch of pillows and stuff, so he like landed on pillows and stuff. So it was kind of good in that sense. So yeah,
even today, like I thought it was mildly entertaining. He's like since the internet wrestling community, since the IWC knows everything, why don't you tell me how to be a better wrestler? I thought that was kind of funny. I mean, that was probably the most entertaining thing I've ever heard come from him, assuming that he did actually write it. So I didn't even mean to go in this direction with this conversation, but it's kind of, you were talking and it kind of got me thinking, do you think that at some point, some kind of like, reunited NXT faction could be something that was worth anything? I mean, when the first Nexus came out, you know, you could see some of these guys had potential, but these guys were all green as hell. But now that, you know, Ryback has a little seasoning, Heath Slater has shown like a little bit of personality. Wade Barrett's pretty good on the mic, but he's never been able to gain any traction. Justin Gabriel's going absolutely nowhere. Like, what do you think if maybe, say, at some point they decided, like, reunite the Nexus with these guys that have kind of developed and got some seasoning? Do you think that could be something that could have any kind of direction? Or do you think it would just be a waste of time?
No, I'd be for it. Because I like the Nexus. I thought the Nexus, the Nexus kind of brought in that whole kind of, it had a lot of, like, NWO flavor to it, especially with, they were able to make, I thought they made stars out of, like, Sheamus. You know, they put Sheamus to the forefront. And I just like the whole gang type mentality of wrestling. Whenever you can have, like, five or six guys that can totally, like, that's what made the Shield so successful, right? It's because they would single out guys, and they'd do it, like, every week. It's like, it was like, if you have that type of thing where they single someone out, you have the 2 minute warning
or the three minute warning.
I mean, that's on the low end of the spectrum.
Right.
Then I thought you had the Nexus, which really could surround the ring and put a big star in trouble, mm-hmm. and just kind of take over and just, you know, beat the star all the way.
Unless it was Cena.
Yeah. Well, but even to a small part, you know, they did it with Cena, but then, you know, Cena's, bless you.
Sorry, man.
God bless you. But then you have the Shield, which is the top. You know, the Shield, they're the ones that actually play that thing to a T. Mm-hmm.
not to cut you off here, but when you look at the Shield doing it, two of those guys were extremely seasoned. Like, Reigns was probably the most, the most rookie out of the three of them. But those other two guys really knew what they were doing. If you look at the Nexus as they were originally constructed, I mean, none of those guys really had any kind of experience. And I think... You know, I think Wade Barrett's been this guy for the last couple of years that everyone's like, well, yeah, that guy can be a world champion, but nothing ever happens for him. Ryback's been this guy over the last year that has had some opportunities, but he's never gotten over. He's Slater, you know, he's been a straight jobber, but he's really developed a character and a personality over the last year or so. Again, Gabriel's done nothing. But you start combining these guys, and maybe even you bring in Darren Young and Titus O'Neil. You got a tag team there. You got a guy like Wade that maybe you could push as a world champ. You got a guy like Ryback that maybe you make an intercontinental. You know, you could have a thing, like you're saying, with this whole gang mentality, that maybe they come in and they take a bunch of belts and make a name for themselves.
I'd be all for it. I mean, if we were part of WWE Creative, you know, that would work very easy. I thought Nexus really started breaking down when Skip Sheffield got hurt. Yeah. When he got legitimately hurt and he was out of the picture, that's when everything started falling apart, at least for me. And then, granted, it was like, it was too good of a thing that was going on. And they still had the whole SmackDown Raw type thing, so they had to break them up and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And so that's what happened. I would be for it. I would, anything that can give, like, new storylines to people, like, top stars they think that can carry storylines, say, like, a Batista, say, like, a Sheamus, say, like, a John Cena. Anything you can do to kind of at least see them get their ass kicked every now and then by a legitimate group, I'm all for it. I have no problem with that. And with the way they're doing factions now with the Shield, with the Wyatt family, you have elements in place where it's being done the right way. Now, granted, I think this is total fanboy stuff. I don't think it's ever going to happen. But I wouldn't be opposed to that happening. All
right.
So one more thing before we get into our last two segments. AJ Styles with TNA. Is he done? It was like his last show or whatever like that. I mean, what's going on with this guy?
Yeah, he's done. So pretty much everything I was reading was saying that, you know, he tried to negotiate and it wasn't working. And he started taking books in with Ring of Honor. And then after that was all over, then they had like a... Because he was the champion when they entered into this renegotiation. And then, but since he wasn't going to be on the show for a while, he went around the world defending the belt. And then they had a tournament to crown another champion, and that was Magnus. And then last week, Magnus went against AJ Styles, and Magnus won. And
who the hell is Magnus?
He's a British guy. He's not bad.
Okay.
And then Magnus won that. He won that belt, unified the two, and I'm pretty sure that's all it for AJ Styles. I think he's pretty much just back to Ring of Honor at this point.
So them losing AJ Styles, TNA losing AJ Styles, is that better for TNA or is it worse for TNA? I'm kind of thinking, I haven't watched a TNA product in like 2 years, but I'm kind of thinking that's probably good for TNA. And to tell you the truth, I think Samoa Joe leaving TNA will be good, because you always have these two or three guys that say, like, these guys should be pushed, they're never pushed, and it just makes people mad that TNA isn't pushing the guys that they should push.
I mean, I really can't see how losing Samoa Joe would be good for TNA.
But they don't use him anyways, right?
Right, they don't, yeah. So I mean, it probably, I wouldn't say it's good for them. I mean, it's probably a wash for them. I don't, you know, I can't say what that means for Joe. I mean, like Joe, like, because the thing is, I don't think Joe will ever get a shot in WWE, and that really pisses me off. Like, Joe, you know, that guy's the goods. And for all the times that they try to, like, force a guy like Ryback or force some of these other guys, Samoa Joe can do it all as the big guy. And I'd love to see him go against Ryback or him go against Big E Langston or him go against Mark Henry.
CM Punk.
Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like, because Joe has that, like, kind of MMA-style background with him, or him against Batista. I mean, I think there's a lot of different directions you could go with Samoa Joe. He's probably the best guy in the world at this point that's not in TNA or not in WWE. And that kind of, you know, that disappoints me. You know, it's just hard for me to say, like, honestly, as far as AJ Styles, because I'm not, like, a huge fan of AJ Styles. I mean, I think the guy puts on good matches. He's a really good worker. But, like, to me, that's where he is. He's, like, worker status.
And he can't cut a promo. And
no.
Yeah.
He still can't cut a promo. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't think it hurts TNA, to be honest. But that's because I'm not, like, this big AJ Styles mark. I mean, AJ Lee cuts a better promo than AJ Styles. So I can't – it's hard to buy him as, like, your world champion that's carrying a promotion. But at the same time, he's better than a lot of the guys in the ring that TNA had. Like, I'd rather watch an AJ Styles match and AJ Styles promo than anything that Jeff Hardy has to do. I'll put it that way. So I don't know. I can't say it's a benefit, but at the same time, I don't think it's going to kill him. I mean, that's my point. My point of view, you know, as a Californian, you know, I don't know some of these guys. You know, since they're kind of based out of the South or Tennessee. You know, I think some of those guys, like, have a little more affinity for AJ Styles than I do. So maybe business-wise, I could see where business-wise it could hurt them because they're based out of Florida, and that's kind of his, like, base of operations, Florida, Georgia. But for me personally, I'm not missing him.
So it kind of shows, like, a guy like AJ Styles, and, yeah, he's kind of a known quantity, and it's kind of funny to me, or not funny to me, but WWE didn't go after him. I don't know if they're ever going to go after him. It's funny. It's funny to me to kind of, like, if they do sign AJ Styles, they're going to put him in developmental. You know, which is real funny to me that they would do that if they ever did. But that's probably what would happen. But to me, it really kind of shows, like, there's still an indie scene for Chris Hero to leave and not be mad that he left WWE and he's happy kind of doing the whole indie thing at the same time. And you know, AJ Styles really kind of, you know, all these guys like CM Punk, Chris Hero, AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, Chris, what's his name? My boy.
Daniels.
You know, they kind of made they made ROH what it is. Mm-hmm. And for these guys to kind of go back and kind of do that thing, it really kind of shows that there's something else out there for the wrestling fan instead of just the kind of the main WWE product. And we always focus on WWE just because we're used to professional wrestling, you know, what professional wrestling is, and we're never really big indie guys. So it just kind of shows that, you know, there is that there.
Well, I watch TNA, so I'd be willing to talk TNA on the show if
I ever watched
it. If you ever watched it, but
well, if I get
you don't, and I can't necessarily blame you.
Well, if I get a job with PW Mania, which I'm going to apply to tonight.
I was wondering if are you going to do it?
Yeah, I'll apply tonight, nice. You know, because of my job situation over here. Yeah. But and I got to see what's going on.
That's good. We made it into the 58th minute before you mentioned your job situation today.
Well, what are you trying to say? Was I crying last week? Is that what you're saying?
Nah. Never that.
Really?
It was a fresh wound, man. I can't blame you.
Okay, so Hall of Kayfabe. I've done the last, like, three, I think, eh? So now it's time you just step up to the plate and put a guy in the Hall of Kayfabe. And here we go. Look, he's looking at the crown molding again. Look at that.
Well, that's really nice up there.
I don't got any crown molding.
I'm going to grant that I may be considered prisoner of the moment here. But what I'm going to do is I'm not going to induct someone into the Hall of Kayfabe. I'm going to induct two people into the Hall of Kayfabe. and those two people are going to be the New Age Outlaws.
Okay.
So maybe you can blame me a little bit because, you know, I just saw them and they're fresh in my mind. But, you know, these guys were a really good tag team. I
believe it's current. That's good, though. But you're doing current stuff. That's good.
Ah, thanks.
Yes.
So they're a really good tag team. I believe five-time tag team champions of the world, as the Road Dogg would say. But, you know, when they're in DX, it's like you had Triple H, who was this imposing figure, but for me personally was never good on the mic. You always had the Road Dogg there that could take care of the promos and make them an entertaining thing. And then you got Billy Gunn, who was like a really good worker but kind of a boring guy himself. So whenever him and the Road Dogg were together, it was a good match because Billy Gunn would always put on a great match. And I think pretty much almost to a man, everybody from the Attitude Era says Billy Gunn was one of the best performers in the business that they had. But honestly, he's just kind of a bland character. So for him being teamed up with Road Dogg, who, you know, was sound in the ring but was nothing like,
he's a weak link.
Right. Yeah. Well, physically, right? Yeah. But, like, he could carry it just on his personality, on his ability to hold a stick, as Arn would say. I think, you know, it made him a legitimate team and a really good tag team in a time where there was actually good tag teams in the WWE.
Yeah, no, it's funny that it's taken this long for us to do it. And, the New Age Outlaws and especially Road Dogg, they were always there. And it's kind of like we were talking about CM Punk always being there. Well, you knew Road Dogg was always there, and you knew Road Dogg was always going to captivate the audience or get the audience with them. It's like, it's funny, like when they were on Raw, me and my girls were watching it, and I kind of had the TV low or something like that, and then they came out, and then I rewinded it because I wanted to hear, you know, You Didn't Know, and then my old artist was like, oh, I love that song, you know, so we always talk about the small things, and the entrance that they had, the music that they had, mm-hmm. is epic, dude. I mean, it's like you know exactly where you are, what you're doing. You know, it's like yeah, I remember when they did this 15 years ago, yeah. And it's still entertaining as all hell.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, when he started getting still, he started trying to push more stuff. Like his finisher was a pump handle slam, and I think towards the end when he really wasn't going anywhere with the WWE, you know, he started humping the guy before he did the pump handle. So, yeah. You know, it wasn't like everything he did was gold, but you know, like even like the crooked letter, you know, I don't like that part of that
double
thing.
A crooked letter.
Yeah, I mean,
it's PG now, man.
Yeah, it is. No, but yeah, I mean, still, you know, you can always, you know, you brought up one thing last week when you said that, you know, when Flair comes back for old school Raw, you know, people flip out, right? You know, because they had the storied career and that WWE really isn't creating any type of superstar like a Ric Flair that can get everybody liking them. Well, the New Age Outlaws, they're one of those guys. Anytime that they come back, to the ring or they come back, it's welcome. And I've been very happy that they've been here for the past 2 weeks. And it's good seeing both of them work. And Billy Gunn had a great match. He had a great match this past Monday. The moves that he was doing, I'm sitting there, you know. And then JBL, of course, in perfect JBL fashion, really said what I was thinking. He's like, has anybody ever told like Billy Gunn that he's old? You know, he's like, he's doing stuff that we've never seen him do before. Yeah, you know, and Billy Gunn, you know, I thought Billy Gunn, you know, for the whole point of the Hall of Kayfabe of never getting his due, I felt that he could have been like an Intercontinental Champion. I felt that he probably could have been a World Champion because his work rate was there and they put him in good storylines. But I think there was some stuff going on. Like I know Road Dogg had substance abuse problems. I don't know if Billy did or not. But as Road Dogg goes, Billy goes. you look at the DXs, right? You look at the first DX with Shawn Michaels, China, and Triple H, and don't forget Ravishing Rick Rude. They're good. You know, it was fine. What they were doing at the time worked really well. But DX didn't take off until those two guys joined in.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a case where they were kind of pairing them up a little bit. And this was right when Shawn was starting to leave. And, you know, kayfabe-wise, Shawn was saying, like, oh, you know, the New Age Outlaws, they don't even belong in the same breath as DX and this, that, and this. But when they were together, Road Dogg was the one that was shining. You know, Road Dogg was the guy that everybody liked. And he's, you know, kind of saying about Skip Sheffield, right? well, within that group of DX, Road Dogg was the guy that carried that one. Same thing with like the Four Horsemen. They said, like, you know, Arn was the backbone of that group. Mm-hmm. Well, Road Dogg's the backbone of that group, and he's always carried it. And as much as Triple H and Shawn Michaels kind of want to be kind of the front men and stuff, Road Dogg is the front man. And I don't see anything else that Road Dogg could have done. You know, I don't think he could have been an Intercontinental champion. He couldn't be any type of champion. But in terms of mic guys, to me, he's one of the best mic guys ever.
Yeah, and at the same token, while Road Dogg's carrying it on the mic, it was Billy Gunn that was the backbone in the ring. I mean, aside from Shawn Michaels, he was the best worker out of that crew. So, I mean, I think he's a better worker. Just straight work, I think he's better than Triple H.
Really?
Yeah, and definitely a better worker than Shawn Michaels. So, I mean, I think him having him there for those tag team matches in that group, you know, I think, yeah, he offset, like him and Road Dogg were a, like, great team, because, like, what Billy Gunn was good at was the stuff that, like, Road Dogg was kind of lacking in, and what Road Dogg was great at, like, was the stuff that Billy Gunn was kind of lacking in.
Yeah, and the thing is that nobody really liked Billy Gunn. Yeah, I mean, they respected him, but he was the guy that you wanted to see get beat, you know, especially like his feud with The Rock. I mean, I hated that feud with The Rock because I hated Billy Gunn so much, and that's really what a feud should be. It's like I wanted to see The Rock beat Billy Gunn, and when right before the pay-per-view, when he got the upper hand on The Rock, which they never showed that, by the way. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's like he's a guy that I never liked, but I respected him. And there was one time when they first started breaking him off a little bit, and they were kind of separating him up a little bit. You know, Billy Gunn was like they had like this mystery partner, right? And nobody knew who it was, and out comes walking Billy Gunn, and I'm going like, yeah, I'm like, that's like if they can take this whole kind of mystery partner type thing, like, and he's like a major guy within the company. If they can harness that thing right there, he can do something. Mm-hmm. And granted, it only lasted for one show, and then the next show he wasn't around. Mm-hmm. A couple of highlights with the New Age Outlaws, especially with Road Dogg, was that one Royal Rumble with Road Dogg, where he was straddling the bottom rope, and he was there for like a long time. And, yeah. But the dude was hella skinny back then, dude. You know, you could tell that he was having some problems. And then when they left, and I think they joined TNA, or they did. Yeah, it was TNA. They called themselves the Voodoo Kin Mafia.
Yeah.
And I'm going like, Voodoo Kin, what the hell is that? And then it's like, oh, VKM, like Vincent Kennedy McMahon. Oh, yeah, that's pretty good. So I'm glad that they're back. You know, I always felt that they could have done more with those two guys within WWE. I thought they had a longer shelf life. They just broke them up for no reason.
Yeah.
And they tried to team up Road Dogg with X-Pac. Never really worked. They tried to team up with R-Truth. That didn't work. And it's like, dude, these guys belong together. And it was nice for a while when they reunited and stuff with the DX. That worked for a long time. Then they broke that up again. Mm-hmm. And then these guys were gone.
Yeah. And, you know, you kind of alluded to it, but Billy Gunn was the target of one of the better Rock promos, which is the...
introduced a famous Rock saying. You know which one, right?
Yeah, it would be...
Dear God. Yes.
But the famous Rock saying was, it doesn't matter what your name is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, dear God. And as Billy Gunn stood there with tears running down his face and piss running down his leg.
God answered. He said, Bob, but my name is Billy.
It doesn't matter what your name is.
So, all right. So, yeah, good haul of kayfabe. And then here's our last one. Did you do any more homework? No more homework, huh? I told you to look at another match, Dean. And you never did.
You did?
I did tell you.
You did?
I did.
What was this?
It was your homework for next week is going to be, and this one's kind of hard to find, but maybe with the WWE Network coming up, it won't be too hard to find, but it is the match where Barry Windham turns heel on Lex Luger versus Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard.
I don't remember you telling me last week that was my...
It wasn't last week. It was two weeks ago.
While ago.
It was 2 weeks ago if you really look at it.
All right. Let me see if I can think, because... I'll talk about a couple of matches.
And then I get a pick or what?
No, just... I mean, if you got a match, then you can throw it out. But last week, after I watched that Ric Flair match, you know, I was kind of looking at some of the other matches, and I came across a few Haku matches. and it was like early on when Haku, and it's funny that we inducted Beefcake last week, because it was, one of them was Haku versus Beefcake, but there was this like Germany tour, and so like he had a match with Beefcake and he had a match with Benoit. The match that he had with Benoit was pretty damn awesome, man. And
that was when he was doing his whole Faces of Fear thing, right?
Let me see. No. There was still WWE.
Oh, it was?
Yeah.
With Benoit?
Wait, let me think about that. Was it Faces of Fear?
It was Faces of Fear.
So, right? The Beefcake one was WWE. Maybe it was Faces of Fear. But, yeah, regardless, the match with Benoit. Yeah, it was. It was because, Benoit was one of the four on his leg. Yeah, so that match was really good. It was probably the first time that I've actually had Xavier sit and watch a Ming match. But he was really impressed. Ming Haku, he was doing like every suplex that you could think of. He had that good standing sidekick, German suplexes, headbutts off the top rope.
Ming was doing this.
Yeah.
Okay, because you saying that sounds like Benoit was doing
it.
Which is saying a lot about Ming right now.
Exactly, and it was back and forth between the two. And then Ming, I mean, you know, he lost both of the matches. And I think one was on like kind of a stupid roll up. The Benoit one was fine, but the way he lost to Beefcake, I can't remember exactly how it was, but it was kind of silly.
You threw down the keys, right?
Because I know the
biz,
the career path of Ming. But that match that he had with Benoit, that stuff was really good. Really technical, you know, and you don't really think of, you know, these 280-plus pound. Polynesian wrestlers as being technical, but he's pulling out pile drivers, he's pulling out German suplexes, the diving headbutts, yeah, like you said, like all the stuff that Benoit would do, he was able to match him equally, and it wasn't like, you know, he was at any kind of athletic disadvantage.
So I gotta do my homework and look at this match then.
Yeah, it was really good.
Here's the funny thing with Haku and Ming, right? You know when I became a really big fan of Ming and Haku? It was not because you said you liked him. Now, I kind of like took more interest in the guy because you said you did like him. But see, back then they had a bunch of squash matches where it's by himself and stuff. And it was right when he was done being the king of, you know, the king of WWF and stuff. And then he'd have these squash matches on Saturday Superstars, and I really started respecting him then. But it's when he became tag team champions with Andre the Giant, and pretty much he did all the work. I mean, he faced both guys. He did all the work in the ring. You tag Andre would drop the elbow, and the match was over. But that's when I really started enjoying the guy. And it was like probably like the, you know, we could do the Ming 101 right now, but it was probably like the most what if of all times that never happened. And I really wanted it to happen was when Andre turned on Bobby the Brain, not the one that blocked me on Twitter, the parody account that gets really serious, that he's a parody account of Bobby the Brain.
Yes.
But he, you know, he turns on... Andre the Giant turns on Bobby the Brain and just, like, takes care. I think some of the other family was there, and he kind of just cleans house, right? And you see, like, Ming in the middle of the ring. I'm going, like, well, what about Ming? It's kind of like the whole thing of, funny that I bring up Bobby the Brain, but it's kind of like when Hogan comes out and goes, like, well, what side is he on? When you turn to NWO, I'm sitting there going, like, well, what is Ming going to do? I was like, man, like, I know Ming is going to stand up for Bobby the Brain. I said, but if he doesn't, dude, I'm like, man, this guy's going to take off. If he gets his flipping babyface heat.
If him and Giant and Andre went on a babyface run and he got the rub from Andre.
Yeah, I mean, to me that would have been like, and who's more deserving of getting a rub from Andre than Haku? Yeah. Because, you know, Andre was at that time, you know, not at that time, but like in the 70s, he was the toughest guy in the business, where Haku was slowly becoming the toughest guy in the business. So that was always like the biggest regret out of any wrestling angle that I ever saw. Like he tried to give the Sabat kick to Andre, and Andre just brushed it off and took care of him real fast. But that's when I really started becoming a fan of this guy. So I will try to watch the match with Benoit Haku, because now I'm intrigued, because I miss the old Haku of doing all the suplexes and stuff and everything. I'm used to being a straight powerhouse. But
no, it was really good. He had the jumping pile driver, which Wendy still could do it, and it looked good. And the whole match was really good. The pace was really good on both of them. It was a nice match.
All right, so we're at Moodle Skill number 61. Thanks for spending about an hour and 15 minutes with us. Good show today, dude.
Thank you.
You did a lot of... It's nice letting you talk for a while and me not, like, taking over and talking out of my, you know, talking out, you know, just saying stuff just to hear myself talk. So it's nice when you come with some stuff, you know. So,
well, I had no stuff, but you were asking me questions this time, so I had
to, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, you know, it's
I actually had one more thing, but you know, we don't have enough.
Am I pulling up the box?
Yeah, no, we'll have to table that one. I don't think we got time for it. But.
All right. Okay, so we have Better Have My Jokes over here on Bad News Ramen. We're at Moon Scale 61. We'll check you guys out next week. And as always, thanks for sticking around and talking wrestling with us.